I was furious. It was a Friday night, about a month ago. I broke a date night rule and fiddled with my phone on the way to the restroom. And I scrolled through the news, and I was horrified by what I read. Travelers, refugees, even green card holders from 7 predominantly Muslim countries were immediately banned from entering the country. It seemed like our worst fears, echoes of the turning away of Holocaust refugees, of the Japanese internment, were coming true. And so I stomped back to our table and tried to make nice conversation over romantic dinner. I was a terrible date that night, if at least that is what I have been told. I felt angry and helpless. These were familiar feelings. I'd been feeling them pretty much since election night when I told my wife that I thought I should quit my job. Now, that may not sound like much of a big deal, but for me it really was. I had dreamed of being a civil rights lawyer since I was a teenager, and that's what I am today. I direct the ACLU's Voting Rights Project, which means I supervise our organization's work on voting rights around the country. We are not trying to help one party over another. We just believe that human dignity and our democracy are best served when everyone can participate. Between the 2012 and 2016 elections, we won 15 cases in 12 states, protecting the voting rights of more than 5 million people. But despite all of our work, turnout was down in 2016. We might have undone some of the worst voting restrictions in the country, but it turns out that whether people actually turn out is not something that we can control. Now, taking off my ACLU hat for a minute and just speaking personally, I was angry at people who didn't show up to vote, at family members who voted for a candidate who normalized the demonization of people on the basis of their religion and national origin, and mostly at myself for not doing more. The day after the election, I stepped into a packed elevator at work, mostly full of paralegals and legal assistants, and a colleague from our LGBT rights project put her arm around me and said, "Thank you for everything that you did." And I broke down and started to cry. And I pulled myself together, I said thank you, and when I stepped off the elevator, I turned around and I saw some of those 20-somethings wiping tears away from their eyes, and I thought to myself, I let them down. I failed. And I thought maybe it was just time to hang it up. The late civil rights lawyer and NYU law professor Derrick Bell wrote provocatively 25 years ago, that racism is an integral, permanent, and indestructible component of this society. That's pretty radical and pretty pessimistic, but oppression and systematic injustice along racial lines have always been a part of our history, since before we were a nation. It's always been one step forward, one step back. The gains of emancipation and Reconstruction were wiped away by redemption and a century of Jim Crow. The civil rights movement was followed by the era of mass incarceration. And why would we think that we are any more enlightened than previous generations? Now, as you all know, the day after the travel ban was announced, something incredible happened. Protests erupted at airports around the country, and I want to be clear that I had absolutely nothing to do with what I'm about to describe. But my colleagues from the ACLU Immigrants' Rights Project sprang into action, and working with people from many other organizations, including the International Refugee Assistance Project, who shared our offertory last month, they got together and they filed an emergency lawsuit to block the deportation of anyone subject to the ban. Now, I was inspired, but I still felt helpless. I'm not an immigrants' rights lawyer. I don't know anything about immigration. And I thought, what can I do? And I was having not just a crisis of confidence in myself, but really a crisis of faith. The sixth principle of Unitarian Universalism is the goal of world community with peace, liberty, and justice for all. And I wondered, can I be much of a Unitarian when I harbor serious doubts about whether or not such a world is even possible? In arguing that racism is a permanent feature of American life, Derrick Bell himself did not despair. Now, instead, he argued that if we clearly apprehend the world as it is, we can experience a profound sense of freedom and elation about our purpose in life, which is, in his words, to recognize evil and fight it. Now, after that lawsuit was filed, I received an email alert that there would be an emergency hearing at that night at the federal courthouse, just a few blocks from here at Tabman Plaza, and I rushed over. There were already hundreds of people there, and there was only limited seating in the courtroom, and I ended up being one of the last people not to get in. So I stood outside with the crowd, and I was cold, but I wasn't in the dark. Now, in this courthouse, most people, including members of the media, have to surrender their phones when they go in, but lawyers are allowed to keep them. And so I was following updates from the legal team inside. And when I got the news that the judge had ruled against the ban, for a few seconds, I was one of the only people in the world to know what had just happened. I sort of didn't know what to do with that. I turned around and looked at the crowd, and I just raised a fist in the air, and I shouted that the court had blocked all deportations, not just in New York, but around the country. And a huge roar came up from the crowd. And in that moment, the anger and the despair that I was feeling fell away and gave way to euphoria. And yet, euphoria fades. The world that we live in is still the same world, maybe just a little bit less unjust. But in some sense, expecting a permanent end to injustice amounts to a rejection of our world, with all of its imperfections and its fundamental imperfectibility, in the hopes of some sort of unobtainable utopia. And that is really just, I think, a prayer for a never-ending afterlife. It's the antithesis of embracing life, which is continual, constant change, and not always in a positive direction. The anger that I felt that night still with me. It bubbles up more frequently than I would like, and in ways that I can't always control or channel positively, frankly. And it'll be with me for a long time. Maybe 4 years, maybe eight. Probably I'll be angry to some extent for my entire life. Jean-Paul Sartre wrote, "Life begins on the other side of despair." My colleagues in that courtroom that night didn't put an end to the travel ban. In fact, it sounds like we're getting a new one tomorrow. But they did put a temporary halt on deportations. Seneca Falls did not end sexism. Selma did not end racism. Stonewall did not end homophobia or transphobia. But the men and women of those resistance movements did not despair, despite facing far worse odds than we do. They found meaning in their fight. And if they did not give up, then I know I have no excuse for quitting. What I've been trying to tell myself is this. We are not called merely to fight one unjust executive order, one law, or one administration. We are called to play our small parts in a long, relentless, beautiful struggle, one that has been going on long since before our grandparents were born, and will go on after we, our children, and our grandchildren have passed from this earth. Please rise in body and spirit and join us in hymn number 18. Please join us in hymn number 18 in your gray hymnal, What Wondrous Love.